Penguin Random House Audio presents Betsy, a memoir by Betsy Johnson with Mark Vitolano. Read for you by Betsy Johnson.
Now to you, it may just be a book, but to me, it's my life, and that's scary. I could have written this memoir years ago. In fact, I tried to, and it didn't work out. I don't think I was ready. But now I'm at a point in time where I have some perspective and am able to look closely, a point where I finally feel I have the courage to draw back the curtains and see what's behind them, the good, the bad, and the hard to look at. This book is also a way for me to give back, something for the generations of devoted Betsy girls. Everybody knows me by my cartwheels, the splits, the crazy hair, and the sexy clothes. But I want people to see that there's a real person behind the persona I've spent years creating, and also to know that there is a method to my madness. And who knows, maybe learn some life lessons along the way. So what do you say? Let's lace up our roller skates and go for a ride. XOX Betsy. Chapter 1. A White Picket Fence, The Early Years. To go back to the very beginning, I was born on August 10, 1942, in Weathersfield, Connecticut, a small suburb of Hartford. That date put both my sun and moon in the sign of Leo. Now, I don't take astrology too seriously. I don't make daily decisions based on charts or planets or any of that. But there's no denying that from the time I was little, my Leo personality was in full bloom. From what I've heard, the sun in Leo means that you go out into the world and you shine. And that behavior was always instinctual to me. I was full of energy and enthusiasm and had my own special kind of appeal that wasn't at all determined by my looks. I was never the kind of pretty that would make every head turn when I walked into a room, that's for sure. Instead, I relied on my bubbly, oddball personality to make my way in the world. I distinctly remember one instance of that from when I was a child. I was home after school. My sister and brother were at opposite ends of the living room, both studiously doing their homework. I walked into the room and out again, and back again, the whole time walking on my hands, my feet in the air swaying as I tried to keep my balance. I kept this up for more than 30 minutes until my mother finally toppled me over and said, "Betsy Lee, stop that." I looked up at her from the floor, confused, and said, "I can't. It's not perfect yet." That was my peculiar drive in a nutshell. As bubbly as I may have been, I was also what my mother called a worrywart, which I thought sounded so ugly, but she was right. I would literally lie in bed at night and fret. It wasn't just the typical monster under the bed situation. I was just an insecure, scared little girl. I remember I had this irrational fear of dying, which came seemingly from nowhere. My mother would ask me what I was so worried about, and I didn't know how to answer. What made it all the worse was that I didn't even know how to talk about it. The fear was very real to me. I couldn't accept that I was actually going to die in the end, whatever and whenever the end might be. I used to tell my mom, "I better not die before Christmas," which was my favorite time of year. My mother, in her own way, trying to reassure me, would say, "We're all going to die someday." I didn't feel any better. Her response just fueled my anxiety. If I were to play an armchair psychiatrist, I would have to say that World War II had something to do with my dread. The war was in full swing when I was born. I do remember hearing war reports on the radio as a child and seeing scary pictures in the newspaper that I didn't quite understand. The war didn't directly threaten our safe little corner of Connecticut, but I guess the specter of some kind of Nazi boogeyman permeated the collective consciousness in a way that even little children couldn't escape it. My father would tell us stories of his role during the conflict. He was what was known as a blackout man, responsible for going around the neighborhood and making sure everyone had their blackout shades down after sunset. I found it creepy that my dad, who was sweet, kind, and so full of life, had to make sure everyone in town was sealed into darkness every night. I could also attribute my anxiety to the moon in Leo part of my nature. And by that I mean when my Leo moon would kick in, oh, crumb. It'd come along with a pail of water to pour all over my sunny side up. From very early on, I understood that I had a choice. Did I want to choose the light or the dark? I wanted the happiness and the sunshine. I usually found it easy enough to shake off the dark and get back into the light. Weathersfield was at that time a very small, tight-knit community, the type of place that had neighborhood vegetable gardens where everyone knew everyone else. Women would get together once a week for sewing bees. My mother actually hated sewing, but she joined in to be sociable and to learn to sew clothes for her children. It was cheaper for her to make our clothes than to go out to a department store to buy them. Every year she'd make matching back-to-school dresses for me and my sister. They were always plaid and had little puff sleeves and sashes and bows. She later also sewed all of my dancing costumes, and I started to help. I had no idea that this would become my life's work. Back then, it was just a means to an end. I don't remember deriving any great pleasure from cutting and sewing, other than the joy of spending time alone with my mom. I don't know whether my family would have been considered working class or lower middle class. Whatever they were, I just know we weren't fancy. We lived in a classic little house with a white picket fence. Very quaint, very country. Looking back, I see my childhood as very comforting and traditional. A series of endless sunny summers, followed by winters that looked like Christmas cards or a Norman Rockwell painting. We were apple pie to the max. I had the most wonderful, loving family you can imagine. There was Mom and Dad, and I've already mentioned my brother and sister. By way of a more formal introduction, they are Sally, who was the oldest of the kids, and Bobby, the youngest, each of us 2 years apart. When I was really little, we had two kittens, which I named Pete and Repeat. In fact, we always had animals around. I remember there was a collie named Lassie, not the most original name, a horse named Scout, and later on another cat who would only eat Cheerios that she would take one at a time from a bowl with her paw. Sally was the best sister I could ever wish for. She was just so perfect, always doing good things. She was the president of her class. She ran the local pool. She volunteered for the Red Cross. Everything she did, I wanted to do too. I guess you could say I idolized her. Even while my true nature was already pointing me towards a different path, part of me wanted to follow in Sally's footsteps. I sometimes felt that I couldn't keep up with her, and there were definitely periods of animosity and competition. I'd sometimes get so upset with her, which was usually just my own frustration at not being as good as her. I fantasized about sneaking up to her bed while she was sleeping and biting her fingernails off. They were her pride and joy. My high energy level always had me feeling nervous or anxious, so I naturally bit my own nails down to the nubs, which left me with aching fingers. I hid my hands a lot. As for Bobby, he was the typical happy, sweet brother. He was the fastest guy on the basketball team. Basketball wasn't the only sport he was good at. He also had a sharp eye when it came to darts. One time he landed one right into my leg, all the way from across the room. To say that we were an active bunch would be an understatement. Between Cub Scouts, Girl Scouts, dance classes, baseball practice. We kept Mom and Dad pretty busy carting us around, but they never begrudged us our after-school activities. Quite the opposite. They totally encouraged and supported them.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?